Morning, everybody. Matt Bubala with you. 720 WGN, 3:39 in the morning. Another fascinating story that I want to talk about tonight is a new investigation into Anne Frank. And how did her family get turned into the Gestapo? How did they get caught? Joining us on the phone right now is former FBI agent Vince Pankoke, who's leading a new investigation into this. Good morning, Vince. How are you?
Well, good morning, Matt. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone. We appreciate it. You are a retired FBI detective living in Florida now. Is that right?
That is correct. Isn't that where we all go when we retire?
I haven't figured it out yet, but I guess it could be. How is Florida these days? Is it nice and warm down there?
It is nice and warm. Every once in a while, we have to dodge a hurricane.
Right.
But it is still nice and warm. We haven't had the break. I was listening to your current weather whenever I was on hold, and we're anxiously awaiting that little cool down.
Yeah. Oh, really? Is it still really hot down there right now?
It is still really hot down here.
Where did you serve in the FBI? You said you were retired down there, so where did you live when you were working?
Well, my first 4 years, whenever I came into the FBI, I left a police job in Pennsylvania where I was a police officer for 8 years. I actually served just north of you across the border in the state of Wisconsin.
Okay.
And then the remaining 23 years were actually served in Miami.
Okay. So you had some
my travels
time
took me all over the world.
I'm sure. And I believe your wife is from Chicago. You have some sort of Chicago tie in the family, right?
Well, actually, my wife isn't, but my daughter spent about 4.5 glorious years there. She's a bridal designer, and she first started her business and had her studio in Chicago.
Oh, cool.
But unfortunately, had to move about a year ago due to her husband getting a job in Washington, D.C.
Okay. Well, good. Well, thank you so much for jumping on the phone. I appreciate it. I have not read The Diary of Anne Frank in probably 20 years. I have a copy at home because I've been waiting for my kids to get old enough to really read it. And so I was fascinated when this story came out. You are doing research and trying to gather data and documents to use artificial intelligence and just big data crunching techniques to try to figure out how Anne Frank's family got turned over. How in the world, I'm really fascinated by this, how in the world do you think that documents that have been around forever will help shed light on this?
Well, what we have to look at, Matt, is that, we've all read the diary, but most of us never realized that the mystery behind what caused the arrest has never been solved.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that till I was working with Dutch National Police colleagues in 2005, and they pointed out to me that there remains this mystery to what actually led to the arrest. In fact, it's the number one asked question during the Anne Frank House tour, what led to their arrest. And that was in the back of my mind. I've always been sort of a World War II buff and had interest because my dad and his three brothers served in World War II. My dad's unit actually liberated a camp in southern Germany near Mittenwald. And so my interest was always there. And then whenever I received a call from my Dutch colleagues who knew I retired, they were probably jealous. They just wanted to see me get back to work and said, we've been approached about a project. We think that it would be better to have somebody independent and perhaps from the FBI lead it. And I looked at the body of work that had been done up until that point to determine what actually caused the arrest and said, you know, this is not a complete body of work. There are gaps in the investigations. And there were two official investigations, one in 1947 and one in 1963. Both of them very old, very dated. So your question about how we think these documents are going to solve it is that we're going to apply modern police investigative techniques, modern law enforcement, and many techniques that we use within the FBI in an attempt to solve this, because there is room for improvement on what has been done in the past.
Is there much that you talk about modern techniques? Is there, you know, and I know that so much has been changed about forensic and scientific gathering of evidence. Is there a lot available to you that modern police tactics can help with? Because I would imagine that it's so long ago that while the house is still there, there's certainly no evidence there that's going to, it would all just be based on whatever documents there are. Is that right?
Well, that is true, but there's much more than that. Yeah, we're not going to be going in and swabbing for DNA. That's
sure.
That's not going to be an issue. And that, you know, the scientific forensics, they have come, you know, light years from the 1940s. But you mentioned one technique, and that is artificial intelligence and big data. And that's just one facet of what we're doing. There's been so much information that's been written about what happened to Anne Frank. There has been so much data that has been collected after the war, the seizing of Gestapo records. There was a giant project in the United States in the late 50s, early 60s, where we microfilmed every Nazi document that was captured during World War II from the Allied sectors, except the Russian sector, but it was microfilmed and put into our U.S. archives. Many of these records have been classified up until about the year 1999 for various reasons, and we're going through them, every one of them painstakingly, having them translated to see whether or not there's any clues within there. But I mean, that's just one part of it. We've already found great stuff. We found lists of Nazi informants in the Netherlands, particularly in Amsterdam, around where Anne Frank and her family and the other people who were hiding with them were positioned. So there's great hope there. But we're also a modern police technique is appealing to the public. The ego of police departments in the 40s and 60s wouldn't have allowed them to ask the public for help. It just wasn't commonly done. And so we, through our website, coldcasediary.com, we're appealing to the public to say, if you were a relative, or perhaps you even lived through that time period, we've actually been contacted by a few survivors of that time period, who are providing us with stories and clues and even in some cases documents that are helping us put the pieces of the puzzle together. So that's another one. We're using profiling, which our behavioral science unit at the FBI pretty much pioneered. And I went to a colleague who was one of the founding members back in the early 70s, of our behavioral science unit. He's been retired for years, but he's referred to as like the sage or the oracle of profiling. And I asked him if he would consider doing, you know, one final case, even though he's been retired for years. And he has agreed to it. His name is Dr. Roger Depew. And so we are presenting Dr. Depew with all of the written statements of the witnesses, subjects, and even one victim, Otto Frank. He was the only one who survived of the eight people. And he is reviewing them from a profiling standpoint. Is there anything contained within their statements that would indicate a feeling of guilt or perhaps even a reluctance, a personality trait that wouldn't allow them to betray someone? So those are three modern techniques. But then even a final one, we're dealing with a case that's 73 years old right now. And myself and my investigative team, we're trying to understand exactly what took place during the arrest. It was a several hour process. There's a number of accounts. There are a number of witnesses. Even the Gestapo leader of the raiding team was located by the famous Nazi hunter Simon Wiesenthal in 1963. He was interviewed by the media. He was interviewed by Dutch investigators, even interviewed by Austrian investigators. So there are statements out there that that Dr. DePue has access to and is reviewing. So we're hoping that when we take all this information and put it together, not only in the artificial intelligence database, but just on visual boards for us to see what may have been missed, what connections may have been missed. We're hoping to come up with that clearer picture of the puzzle enough that we could say, this is how they were probably betrayed.
When you're mentioning that there were all these archives that were microfilmed and kept in storage in our archives, and many of them were top secret or under lock and key until the 1990s. So are you looking at a lot of documents that nobody's ever really truly delved into before because they were secured away and unavailable to the public, and only in recent years have been out there? Is a lot? Are you looking at a lot of stuff that maybe nobody's even looked at since the 50s?
I can see that's the case, because many of the documents that I'm looking at were, even though there was a law passed in 1999 that said all documents from World War II must be released to the public, unless that agency can show absolute just cause why not to. So the ones that I'm looking at, some of them were actually cleared and stamped declassified 2003, 2002, 2004. I believe that many of these have never seen critical eyes, even probably since the war, were they ever even looked at, because the microfilm project, they weren't really looking at it as much as passing it through microfilm readers. Yeah. And the hope that I have is that I was told by many of the historians that, Vince, we wish you luck with the documents, but in November of 1944, an Allied bombing run in Amsterdam actually took out a building called the Zentralstal, which is where the Gestapo was housed. And I have pictures of it totally destroyed. But in the archives, I found a series of documents that actually are stamped from Amsterdam Gestapo unit, which was in the Zentralstal. Many of them fire and water damaged. So I know that some of the documents made it through.
And were the Nazis, I don't know the history well enough to know, I'm assuming, were the Nazis meticulous note takers? Is it very likely that whoever turned in Anne Frank, there was a note written down that this informant gave us this information? Was that probably at least at some point on paper somewhere, and it's just whether or not it survived?
There probably isn't a paper trail that's that clear, where we find this one document that is the needle in the haystack that mm-hmm. says this person turned in Anne Frank. However, there may be a series of two or three documents put together that actually will give us that. For instance, I'm looking at something that the Germans would produce, and it is a receipt. They called it commonly Kopfgeld, which is in German head money. Mm-hmm. And this is a receipt that a Amsterdam policeman received 7.5 florins, which is an amount of money, guilders, during World War II, equated to probably about $35 today, mm-hmm. for actually going, arresting, and finding a Jewish person who was in hiding. And they would receive this reward. And it's a documented receipt, just like you would get if you would, go in and get a pay stub for something.
Yeah.
So this, put together with other documents that show who the informants were during that time period, may actually lead us to the cause. Mm-hmm. Because, the receipts are actually dated. They're given a number. The policeman's name is on here. There are other names on here. It's just an amazing document that is left behind that tells the sad story of what was actually happening with the collaboration by the Amsterdam police and helping the Gestapo hunt for the many Jews, thousands of Jews, who were in hiding.
A texter asks, did Anne Frank's father, who survived, voice any suspicions about who turned them in? I believe he thought it was that was it Otto who thought it was the warehouse manager of the building they stayed in where they were hiding? Their apartment was over a warehouse. Was it Otto? Tell us who kind of the lead suspects were at the time.
Well, yeah, just after the war, there was there were many suspicions. We have to remember that the warehouseman, a gentleman by the name of Wilhelm van Maren, he was hired after Otto, his family, the Van Pels, and Fritz Pfeffer, total of eight persons, were in hiding. And they were in hiding right above the business warehouse that was Otto Frank's business, but because of a law requiring Aryanization of all Jewish businesses, he had actually signed it over to someone else. So he was in hiding. This warehouseman was hired and was actually working below where they were in hiding for more than 2 years. He became very suspicious. He heard sounds, you know, noises. He saw food shipments coming in. So he would actually lay little traps suspecting that people, Jews in hiding, were in the building somewhere and in an area he didn't have access to, but that they would come down into the warehouse areas like at night or on the weekend. So he was very suspicious. And because he was laying these little traps, sprinkling flour, looking for footsteps, laying pencils around on the edge of desks, thinking that, you know, somebody would come down and pick the pencil up or knock it off. All of the staff that worked there and were actually employees of Otto Frank before they went into hiding, they suspected him. And he even mentioned to a coworker that he thought that Jews were in hiding. So he was suspect number one after the war. Mm. However, there were other suspects that were produced in later years, but Van Maren, the warehouseman, was suspect number one, and it was partly because of his suspicious activity, partly because he admitted that he thought that there were Jews in hiding. However, the cursory investigations revealed that he really wasn't that anti-Semitic, and so his ideology perhaps would not have led to him actually picking up the phone or contacting somebody at the Gestapo to say, hey, I suspect Jews are here. It's entirely possible. And in a cold case investigation like we're doing, we have to keep an open mind. We have to look at the body of work that's already been done, determine what hasn't been done, and then look at it as a whole to try to come up with, is one of the prior theories correct, or is there perhaps a new suspect, a new theory?
So you're hoping to finalize the results by the 75th anniversary, which comes up, you're hoping to announce on August 4th, 2019, so just under 2 years from now. What is the goal of figuring it out? If you're able to find out, because there's no plans, I believe, for prosecution,
no.
Will that give some sort of closure? Or I would be, boy, I imagine there's descendants of every family that was there possibly, and the shame that that would bring upon a family to find out that it was their relative who did this. I wonder if there's some consternation about finding the real truth to this after all these years as well.
Well, I mean, there is, and those are all great questions, valid questions. And yeah, we're attempting to have it done by that date to honor the victims. No guarantee that we will, though, and sure, we won't let it interfere with the integrity investigation. We'll just extend that date. But a lot of people will say, why now? Why after 73 years? Does it really matter? Well, you know, time doesn't heal history's wrongs, is what I say. This is about justice for the victims, and just the mere passing of time does not correct the injustice. Because, I mean, we know that genocide and hate crimes are still out there occurring in the world, you know, at this moment.
Sure.
And I feel it's really important to demonstrate to the different perpetrators of these crimes that no matter how long it takes, there's world conscience out there that will try to seek the truth and never forget the victims. Mm. And the one benefit, too, is that even though our investigation is very focused on what went on with Anne Frank and the seven others, because with this artificial intelligence program, we're casting such a wide net over all the data, you know, I can tell you today that we've already solved one other betrayal. Then we look forward to contacting that family's relatives and asking them, are you at all interested in understanding what led to the arrest and betrayal of your family members? And so that's sort of a side benefit of it.
Wow.
Yes, there are people out there that may be a little bit nervous about their relatives being identified, but we're finding that second and third generation out from the war, they're just seeking the truth. And that's what we're seeking. And the motto that we've developed is that there's no statute of limitations on the truth. Yeah. As long as it takes, we're going to come out with it. Casting no judgment, just merely stating the truth.
You can find out more information at coldcasediary.com. You see the whole team, the case laid out, what they're doing. I had read there was a fundraising effort for this as well. Is that still going on?
It is still going on, that, and I'm really humbled by how many people out there are pulled together and are, you know, contributing to the investigation. We've actually in contact with another group that actually came up with the developing part of this idea, who would love to be able to put together a documentary to follow my investigative team. But one way or the other, we're going to complete the investigation. We'll seek funding and get funding from somewhere. And so far, we're really excited about some of the results that we found. And yeah, by following us, we're going to be posting different things that we're doing throughout the investigation for people to follow us.
Well, Vince, I'm going to have Jess, our producer here, stay in touch with you. And every 3 months or so, or is there some new information to shed on it? I'd love to check back in with you and get an update on where things are headed and keep people interested in the case. It's fascinating.
Absolutely, Matt. Would love to.
Vince Pankoke, it's coldcasediary.com. The Anne Frank investigation. Let's see if they can find out what really happened after the diary ends. How did the family get turned in? Let's see if they can crack the case and see where the techniques take them. Vince, thank you so much for jumping on the phone tonight. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Matt.
All right, we'll talk again. Vince Pankoke. Again, visit coldcasediary.com. A lot of information there. And if you want to donate and contribute, you're welcome to do that too. They certainly would appreciate it. Quick break, and then the news next, 720 WGN.